Hi, this is Jérôme Dupont from Domaine Dupont in Pays d'Auge, located in Normandy, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode number 98. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are speaking with Jérôme Dupont of Normandy, France. There'll be more on that chat in just a moment. It's time to check in with all the new folks who have joined the Cider Chat Facebook page, and I've been a little bit remiss in getting to this. We haven't had any updates since I think it was like episode number 91. So that was 7 episodes ago and a couple months, and I am ready to say howdy doody to all you cool folks who have joined in the conversation. And it's really across the map, and that's part of why I love doing this, because we get to see the reach of Ciderville all around. I mean, anywhere where there's apples or a love of apples, there are people who want to engage in the conversation. So the first howdy doody goes out to Jennifer and also Ian from the U.S. And then there's Jacob from Embark Craft Ciderworks in New York. Oh, I really love their cider. Jacob, I hope to catch up with you not too far in the distant future to chat about Embark. Really great cidery if you haven't had it before. That's again in New York State. Then there's Lyndon, who is down in North Carolina, and Lyndon is part of the Botanist and Barrel. Check this out. It's a wine bar, and it looks like they are making some delicious libations. So I want to follow up on that. Again, that's a Botanist and Barrel in North Carolina. Then we have Bruno up in Quebec. I have not gotten to all the folks that I want to speak to in Canada. I mean, I feel like Canada and the UK are two areas that I want to touch base with, and I'm just trying to keep up here. But thanks again, Bruno, for joining in on the conversation on the Cider Chat Facebook page. And I am definitely keeping my eye on the prize to my neighbors to the north. Speaking of the UK, we have Tom, who just joined, and also Jason Triplett, who I'm not sure where you are from, but it looks like you're studying how to do some drilling of wells. I imagine maybe water wells, I suspect. Also back in the US of A, we have Courtney from West Virginia, who's an RN. Love RNs. I've worked with so many over the years in my other work field. And then there's Joseph, who's from Kentucky, and Nathan from California, whose wife is now expecting. So congratulations, Nathan. All the best of luck. Nathan and I are friends in a couple different areas. He's also a fellow podcaster. Then there's Martin, who is also from Kentucky, and Derek from Illinois. And then Tim. Tim is from Oklahoma, and he is a fermentologist at OK Cider Company. Of course, OK is Oklahoma shortened, and that's really stinking cute. I love that. OK Cider Company. I hope to follow up with that company at some point. I want to find out like what's happening in the Oklahoma cider scene. We haven't really had anything yet from that state in the middle of the Midwest. And then we have Peg, who I don't know much about you, Peg, but I just see that there's this beautiful painting of, imagine like a fully laden apple tree, like red apples up there, and this beautiful woman with red hair. She's reaching up, picking an apple, and she has this kind of like country, old style dress on with like a yoke top and apron. Really, really beautiful. Peg, if you did that, follow up with me. I want to hear more about that painting. And then Shelley is also from the U.S., and Nolan is part of Cider Scene. That is an online blog. You could check them out, Cider Scene. I'll try to get a link in the show notes to that. Thanks, Nolan. I definitely follow what you folks are doing there. And then there's Bev from the U.K., and Scott, who is a head cider maker at Seattle Cider Company. That's in Washington State. Seattle Cider Company really kicks out a lot of great ciders. Another cidery I'm hoping to chat with. Would love to meet up with you, Scott. Maybe I'll see you coming up down in Baltimore at CiderCon, perhaps. That would be awesome. Then there's Lewis from somewhere out in Siderville. And check this out, Greg. Greg, who I'm hoping to get a text anytime soon. He's from Los Angeles. He is also a patron of Cider Chat via the Cider Chat Patreon page. And he just happens to be in my spot of Siderville this week. And we might be meeting up today to say a little howdy doody until he heads while he is heading back to the West Coast. So thanks, Greg, so much for all that you do for Cider Chat. And then there is Marissa, who looks like you are you do jewelry. So isn't that neat? I imagine that, you know, sitting with a little pint of cider and doing your jewelry work goes perfectly, right? I know when I look at my jewelry and I drink cider, I always feel that's really cool. I digress. Then there is, I believe you pronounce your name Hadel, or yeah, it should be Hadel, I believe, from Norway. And we also have Harold from Norway. So talk about all over the map again. And then we're going to go now to Germany with Flo, who is part of Lion Cider Company. And they just won an award for their wild berry cider at CISCA, which is the International Hall of Gala Ciders. That was an event that took place in Asturias. I was there last year, recorded a couple chats. And they just won an award there at this year's event and took place in the latter part of September. So congratulations. And then Damon from somewhere out in Siderville, Paige from New York, Peter from Ireland. Peter reached out to me. I think you're coming this way soon. Peter, do send me an email, ria@ciderchat.com, and I'll give you some tips on traveling here. Then there's David from New Hampshire, and also Garn from, I believe, Canada. And there's a picture of Garn sitting out in the middle of a field with a bottle of something good in his hand, and I could totally relate to that. I just love sitting out in the middle of nowhere with a bottle or a glass like you. That is the best. Tom from Connecticut and Cornelius from somewhere out in Europe. Paula, who is Facebook profile has this stunning black and white cat. I also have one too, but I want to say your cat with that black mask that just covers the eyes and the ears is like a Batman bat mask, which I could tell that cat is really something to be behold. So good for you, Paula. Then there's Lindsay from Washington State, Ada from Norway, Dimitri from the Ukraine. Dimitri, I'm wondering if I just met you over in Normandy. Could be. And then Johan from somewhere in Europe, too. That is a great list of people. Thank you for joining the Cider Chat Facebook page. And you, too, can join it, too. It is not exclusive. It's open to everyone. And come on along and join the conversation. About a week ago, I returned from Normandy, France. I was on the Route du Cider in Pays d'Ouge. That is an amazing area of Normandy. And also on the Route du Poiret. This week, we are going to be speaking with Jérôme Dupont of the Domaine Dupont. They're quite well known for their Calvados. And let me just give you an idea. If you don't quite know what Calvados is, it is a distillation of cider that is aged in a cask for a minimum of 2 years. There is no maximum. And a lot of these cideries, such as Domaine Dupont, you could go there and have a tasting of the range of ciders, perhaps a very young Calvados going up to a 20-year, even later, 30 years, and sometimes even later. The typical alcohol by volume of Calvados is 40 to 41%. And that is a controlled appellation from France. You can't make cider in the U.S., distill it, and call it Calvados. So in the U.S., it would be called apple brandy. And it's also true around other parts of the world. Another product that is made is Pommeau, and that is an aperitif. It's considered an aperitif, and it's a mixture of apple juice, fresh pressed apple juice, with a young Calvados that had been aged in a cask of oak for like a minimum of 18 months. So Pommeau is not considered Pommeau unless it's aged for 18 months. And again, that is a controlled appellation in France. It's delicious. Both of these products are delicious. Of course, Domaine du Pont also makes a cider too, and has been doing some innovation around that, kind of changing it up. A classic Normandy ciders would be with that very farmy taste, kind of being quite forward. Across the map, all these cideries there are using a wild yeast. This was a special chat. We're going to begin with me kind of walking and bringing you into the landscape there. You take this amazing drive up into the domain. And domain is another word for like estate. So if you see that, that's really what they're meaning by that. And then I get into the conversation with Jerome, and we'll follow through with a tasting with Celine, who also works at Domaine du Pont. It was a lovely time, and I think now is the perfect time for you and I to grab a glass and join this chat with Jerome Dupont of Domaine du Pont in Pays d'Auge, Normandy, France. So I've arrived at a Domaine du Pont. Or the full name would be Domaine Familia Louis Dupont. And I'm walking on, like a little red rock on the ground. It's a really grand setting, albeit the fog that is here this morning. It's September, so you have that autumn foliage. It's a nice drive, a beautiful presentation as you come up and you approach the chateau. And there's, to the left as you arrive, the parking area and the offices where you would go in for a tasting. And then the front house is just a beautiful facade, like an ivory yellowish haze to it. There's flowers in the window, which is really lovely. To the right is the carriage houses. And there's Jerome. I'm going to go meet him now.
Welcome to the domain.
Thank you. It's a little foggy out.
That's right, yeah. As it's quite usual in Normandy that time of the year.
Yes, in September.
In September, October.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a busy part of the year because we also started harvest just last week. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're busy. But, my name is Jérôme Dupont. I'm the fourth generation running the estate. The family history on this estate started in 1887, even if my ancestors were for many generations farming in Normandy already, not mm-hmm. here, but in the area. So it started in 1887 with my great-grandfather Jules, who was a classic farmer. He had cows, mm-hmm. cereals. He also was also producing cider and calvados. Cider was the local drink, local potable drink, and calvados was for farmers a way to make savings. You would process apples, distillate, store, and when you needed money, you would sell your calvados in bulk. And my great grandfather, when he settled here, he was renting the place, and thanks to the stock he built between 1887 and 1910. When the place was for sale, he managed to buy the place by selling his stock of calvados, and then he owned the place, and then my grandfather took over. Classic farmer as well. Cows, horses, cereals. And it's in 1980 when my father came back from his first experience as an international banker, and he used to see a lot of French wine and spirits abroad, but not so many calvados nor cider. So he came back with his ambition was to turn the family farm into a sort of a wine and spirit estate, apple estate. And I joined in 2002. My background is engineering. I worked for 10 years as an engineer, and then I said that I probably picked too many apples when I was a kid or waxed too many bottles of calvados, but I needed to come back and then join the family business in 2002.
and worked along my father and my sister since then.
Nice. So that's a long time to be in the Apple business as a family overall, and also for your own personal history.
That's right.
And is that also true of your sister too? What has she? Did she join in the operations of the domain here in around the same time?
That's yes. She joined around 2002 as well. Mm-hmm. Also had her first experience in a different field. Decided that she wanted to join, and there was some space for her. We made some space for her.
Mm-hmm. No looking back, I suppose. Once you get in it, you get the Apple enthusiasm, mm-hmm. and no stopping. What have you seen changed since 2002 to 2017?
I think the main change is really the interest for cider. 2002, cider was a local drink, but not a lot of focus on cider. And I think since then, there's been a lot of interest alongside the craft beer movement. Just after the craft beer movement, the craft cider movement came along. That's the change. Mm-hmm. A nice change.
Right.
A nice change.
Very welcome. Mm. So we're sitting here in September of 2017. Yeah. What year can you remember where you saw like a pivotal change in the draw here? Was it pronounced in terms of 5 years ago or even more recently? And does it grow each year? Like, you know.
My level of interest for cider, I measured with the level of interest from the US, because American cider producers, I think, were the one that first took again interest in cider. If I don't say something incorrect, I think that there's a long history between cider and American people for the pioneers, and that cider got forgotten in some ways, and apple ciders got forgotten. But I really saw the revival of cider in the US, I would say around really, it started 6-7 years ago, mm-hmm. and it's been growing mm-hmm. ever since. Mm-hmm. And now you see that spreading into Northern European countries. Craft cider, of course, mm-hmm. and it's always this issue between what we call real cider and the other ciders.
Right, yeah, that's a much longer conversation,
yes.
But just so everyone knows, what he's speaking about here is the real cider, most folks would consider is just purely apple. And then, of course, the innovation that you're seeing, some wouldn't call it innovation, but some might, is the addition of different fruits into the cider, or ginger, herbs, whole range, mm. Which is part of the excitement, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious, as someone who is based in Normandy, and you know, you're kind of earmarking the U.S., you spoke about the innovation here mm. at Domaine du Pont. Would you like to speak a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yes, we produce traditional cider, mm-hmm. with what I call classic blends of apples, bittersweet, sweet, and acidic apples. But I joined in 2002. Pretty quickly, I thought, and also thanks to the help of some of my customers or mm-hmm. peer colleagues, I thought that. There was perhaps more to offer than only classic cider. Why? Just simply because we have 15 different types of apple cider varieties, and until my generation, the cider producers were pretty conservative, just trying to look at the apples, the specificity, the profile of the apples, and also going and trying to acquire oenological techniques from outside Normandy was something that I thought could be exciting, because we could offer a whole range of cider, just like the beer world offers a full range of different beer styles. I think it pushes you above your comfort zone, and also it really allows to offer a range of ciders of different profiles that can really be food paired with different type of dishes, and it really helps to see people cider to consider, helps local people at least to consider cider with a different eye, and it all that also spring also applies around the world. But that's the innovation was for me something that was really obvious because of the very conservative approach of cider production since today.
And so for most folks who aren't aware of the traditional styles of or ciders, right? In this region, I mean, I come here and I kind of lust after that bottle of Normandy cider that has that farmhouse kind of, you know, effervescence. It's like going to Belgium and having a Belgian style beer.
Yeah,
you know, it just drew you, and people came from all over the world just to go to Belgium. And I think that's, in my mind, why folks initially come to Normandy to really experience that. But your ciders step out of that. And that's what you're talking about in terms of the innovation. So more specifically, what are you doing there that kind of takes it out of that classic Normandy cider tradition?
Typical flavor profile of ciders in Normandy, because 80% of the apples that we have here are bittersweets, just as a natural consequence, you find a lot of local ciders with 80 or more bittersweet apples. Our approach for quite a long time now is to try also to consider cider as a wine or a sparkling wine that you could accommodate in food pairing just as well. But if you're talking about food pairing, you're talking about, I think, also balance. We've stepped aside this 80% of bittersweet apples because we like our ciders to have also some acidity and some sweetness. And that's our approach. So today the master seller who helps us at the domain has 25 years experience in wine and sparkling wine making, and we're always, when we're tasting a blend of apples, we're tasting for future cider, we're always having this approach, this balance approach. I don't know if it's how to put it better than that, but stepping away from the tradition to offer something that's a bit more of a balance that we think is our taste.
So that, just for listeners who out there in Ciderville think, you know, cider should just taste like an apple, and a lot of new folks who the cider, they want to try it, they're excited, they hear the buzz, and they expect, I'm going to be like drinking an apple. And so...
Not quite.
And I think that kind of surprises people. They don't expect it to have that, a very different flavor profile, and you're not necessarily, the fruit forward is coming through in a different way. So how would you recommend people to taste that type of cider that you're making that isn't the classic really farmy or as we might see in some almost flavored ciders that really, you know, it's not going to taste like an apple pie.
No. It can be served as a refreshment, just like yes. a beer, of course.
Right, right.
But then I think also they really have, and this is why our cider are semi-dry or dry.
Mm-hmm.
They really, I mean, cider for me, Normandy cheese, every poultry, chicken, mm-hmm. Pork, white meat.
Mm-hmm.
Cider really food pairs well with this type of dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we were really technical, we have some really special cider with really special profiles, like ice cider.
Right.
Of course, would be that what I would recommend with some other things. But if we stick to classic cider mm-hmm. or to the our cidre bouché, I think mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. Normandy cheeses, chicken, pork. Or just as a beer, as a refreshment,
mm-hmm.
Would be the basics for cooking, for food pairing.
And what would they be expecting to taste? If, you know, I mean, we're in a virtual world right
yes,
here, but if they're bringing
right.
that,
yeah.
you know, the smell, what yeah. would they smell, and how? What would be some of the descriptors that they could say, oh yeah, I...
I think that the first, for someone who's not used to Normandy cider, the first I think is a refreshment. You get this fresh refreshment, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
And then there is this little element of bitterness mm-hmm. that you get, and then the apples are the apple flavors are not like an eating apples. You get some citrus fruit aromas with some acidity, some granny, a little bit of Granny Smith mm-hmm. aromas,
mm-hmm.
But certainly not fresh apple juice. Certainly not fresh apple juice.
Mm-hmm.
And the alcohol strength is around 5-6%. That's what I would say for the classic.
Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here with mm-hmm. a nice glass of
apple juice, yeah.
and it's still in. It's a beautiful bouquet, really okay, nice.
Yeah.
And then, it's a perfect blend, just very quenchable, quaffable. And you know, you have a little bit of that tart there. So this is your base type of juice that you
yeah.
have
mm-hmm.
Throughout. So you do a lot of exportation
yeah.
of your cider to countries around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
But how about the local?
The local reaction is a very natural and classic reaction. What I mean by that is that cider is part of the tradition of Normandy. It's in our roots,
mm-hmm.
just like local cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
So the first reaction to people when you start to tweak their roots
mm-hmm.
is a little bit of concern,
mm-hmm.
Some a little bit of worries, and on top of that, there is a preconceived idea that in Normandy that cider is a peasant's drink and does not have its place on the table for dinner. So that's the on top of this preconceived idea, people don't really like when you change
mm-hmm.
their habits, when they have to change mm-hmm. their habits. So export was I'm talking about the cider, but I've experienced that with other beer makers
mm-hmm.
and other people who are innovating in their field. They get the same thing. People outside France, in the US, for example,
mm-hmm.
did not have this image, this preconceived image mm-hmm. of cider being not worthwhile drinking, basically.
Right.
A cheap drink. Mm-hmm. So sommeliers around the world, as long as you offer a cider that has some interesting ciders,
mm-hmm.
I'm talking about... food pairing and quality wise,
mm-hmm.
They usually are quite open minded and ready to also try the cider and work with the ciders. So this new innovation are usually are difficult locally, easy outside, and then after some time, and it's always funny. I'm always laughing because when I say to people, you know, my ciders are at the some famous bars and restaurants in New York or the MoMA in New York, they can't believe it. And when they see the ciders on the card, on the cider and beer list, then they start to look at you in a different way. And same with the local producers, and that's great. They are, I think, in some ways, we us and other producers. There are other producers around that are also innovating, but we are helping to change a little bit the, not completely, but you know, give a little stone to the. I don't know the expression I want to, but just give a little influence of the overall cider revolution by showing to people that you can step aside of the tradition. Doesn't mean that you're going to do stupid things. Don't do stupid things, but step aside with some vision and and go for it. And you don't have to stick to tradition all the time if you're looking for trying to produce quality products.
Right. I think it's rather amazing to me to come here, because I'll go somewhere and I'll expect to have cider, because I'm in an area that's like the cider mecca of the world, one of the cider meccas. And then I'll go and it's like, oh, well, if you want cider, you have to go to the creperie because, you know, they'll serve it with grapes as a dessert. And when I go into a place, there'll be like a tap. And I'll just say cider, and I'll ask whose cider that is, and they might say Domaine Dupont or Eric Bordelais or something. I'm like, are you kidding me? Why isn't that? Where's the tap handle? Yeah. So it's I think for the cider tourists coming here, you have to be prepared for that.
Yes, that's right.
Could you come in very giddy and excited, and it's like, wait a minute. But that I imagine in the next couple of years, that's going to be really changing in leaps and bounds.
I think so, it's happening right now.
It's so,
you can feel it. And now it's not the cider producers who have to change their habits, it's the bar owners, restaurant owners, who have to understand that it's worthwhile having a cider list. Sommeliers have to understand that it's worthwhile having different cider styles and focusing on food pairing with cider. I think that's coming.
Make room on the shelves. Start making room on the shelves. Right now, when you go into a grocery store, the cider is like, where's the cider? And you're hunting in the back, like where the used toys are or something. And it's not that bad, but it feels like you're on a journey to find it, which is fun. But
it needs some time. People need a little bit of time. The interest for cider has been growing over the last 4 or 5 years, it's coming. My father Etienne has got a project of has a project of creating a cider exhibition next year in Caen. International cider exhibition. He's working hard on it. You know, perhaps giving this focus, and the local people seem to be les élus, les maires,
the local yokels, we would say in the U.S. is the local people or certain our service industry.
The town and the region.
The little mini heads of state in the region and the tourism and all that.
Are taking that into account and I think that we might see. Changes on the because of the international interest for cider.
It really surprises me coming here that there were no like cider festivals, and yet we have, it seems like, hundreds of them now in the U.S. So everything's catching up. Can we talk about like the basics of how many like hectares you have of orchards and and your production?
Yes, we have 30 hectares of apple trees, in which we have 15 different types of apples. The range goes from the extreme bitter apples like Fréquin and Camérien to the very acidic ones like Avrol. And so we produce cider and Calvados mainly. And for the production of Calvados and cider, we're talking about figures, we're talking about 50,000 bottles of Calvados per year and around 150,000, 200,000 bottles of cider. And for this production, we need to harvest around 700 tons of apples.
And is that all done here in this ground? So in that building that across there?
When you arrived on the right-hand side, you could see the press house. You do also have in this press house, you also have the cider tanks for Calvados there. And then on the building opposite, the cider house where Arnaud does the blends of the different apple varieties, produces the different ciders.
Is that your like head cider maker?
Yes, Arnaud is my head cider maker.
And what is Arnaud's full name?
Arnaud Ramsayer.
Does Arnaud also do the distillation, or that's a master distiller you mentioned?
The distillation is done between me and my father.
Okay.
My father still does most of it. He's 74, but doesn't want to retire.
That's young. So, yeah, that's young. 74 is young.
So he gives me a good hand during distillation, which is we'll start mid October and we'll finish end of April. Etienne and myself, we do the distillation. Arnaud really looks after the ciders, and then he also helps us on the blending of the barrels when we're close to the cider, the Calvados bottling. We have also some of the key people here. Everybody's important, but some of the key people here are also Mathieu, who's looking after the shop, welcoming the visitors, who's a former sommelier, decided to go away from wine because he's discovered cider and he likes the variety.
Yay. Cider. Good move.
So Mathieu at the shop. And then we have, we also have Dominique. Dominique, who's celebrated his 30th birthday of working with the Dupont family last Sunday, who looks after the orchards and the press.
Wow, and that's a lot of orchards to look after.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. And your Shay, is that also on the grounds here?
Yes,
that...
that's right. Shays are on the building opposite the office and the shop. And then we also have some stock located close to the warehouse where we stock all the bottled cider and the orders when they're prepared. Ready to go. We also have a little Shay there with some stock of Calvados. We have 700 hectoliters of pure alcohol of Calvados here, which is like 4 years, 5 years of stock.
Yeah, that's nice. And how many years back do you have Calvados aging?
We've got because it's been a long family business, and on the Calvados side, stocking was the thing that was done most
important.
We've got some stock from 1960s, from the 1960s, that we still sell, and then we have some very, very old bottled produced in prior 1900. But not
was that from the sale of this property and your great no.
It was from it was produced by my great grandfather Jules.
Okay.
Circa 1897, and then it was bottled in 1940, and so it's a Calvados that was bottled in 1940, but we still have bottles of that.
And would you say like really old Calvados as an it's kind of like it starts bringing about flavor profiles that are almost like raisiny, or you know, just how does that profile out from like the young to the older?
Young Calvados are usually very fruity, not so complex. Also, you can feel the alcohol on the young Calvados, but not so much. It doesn't burn. A well-made young Calvados does not burn. It can be very, very accessible and approachable, but not so complex. And on the fruit.
Right.
And old Calvados, as they age, they get flavors related with the aging and the contact with the wood.
The wood.
So the typical notes you get when aged Calvados are, of course, wood, but spices, vanilla, raisins. And yes, you get what we call this typical rancio happening after 20, 30 years, who really makes the Calvados, gives another dimension to Calvados. And you still get apple aromas, and you know, an old Calvados will have some cooked, caramelized apples aromas, which will help it still be recognizable among what I called old brown spirits. But the Calvados, an old Calvados, has this smoothness, roundness, and very lingering aftertaste. That is quite unique.
I know that you do educational trainings for people serving your Calvados. And if you would say your one kind of affection as working here, is it the Calvados or is it? I know you could probably say, and I wouldn't be surprised if you said all of it, but is there something that you appreciate to like speak about a little bit more than others or that you're drawn to?
Honestly, it's like saying, you know, when you have kids, which one you prefer.
Okay, that's true. Okay, honestly, fair enough.
Honestly,
yeah.
You know, I definitely brought my signature to the cider range, but I also have a lot of affection and historical link and ties with the Calvados production here, and the Calvados taste itself.
Right.
And for me, you know, both goes hand in hand. I can't really imagine the domain without cider or without Calvados.
Right. Of course. It's like a farm without cows.
Yeah.
Or crops or chickens.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So very difficult. But I'm really lucky. I'm really lucky to live this momentum on cider, which my father hasn't seen.
Yeah.
My grandfather hasn't seen as well.
Yeah.
There's this Calvados cider renaissance is nice, and it's great to be part of that and give your input in that.
Are all your ciders working with the terroir, the wild yeast here, or are you using cultured yeast as you're making?
All our ciders are fermented with the wild yeast until they are bottled. Because that's why we have a temperature control cider house, so that our temperature stays technically between 7 and 10 degrees, and of the yeast population, the yeast that work between 7 and 10 are the one that develop and express the most aromatic flavors. So thanks to that, we can work on the wild yeast.
Yeah, and imagine you have an amazing terroir here to work with, so it's just
we try to keep this terroir. We try to keep the apple varieties. Well, we don't try. We keep them,
right?
Because of course they take part of all the complexity and all the speciality of the ciders we produce here.
I think for people hearing that in other parts of the world, specifically in the U.S., there's such a, I'm not going to say a fear, because I don't think it's to that degree, but people are like, I don't know, should I let the wild yeast go because it's going to like take over, and you never know what you're going to get. What do you say to that? I mean, when I speak to makers here in Normandy, they're like, what? Are you kidding me? Of course, let the wild yeast go. So what's the difference there?
Well, I think it's experience. I think the cider producers here have had to do with wild yeast for many generations. So they've learned to live with them because mm-hmm. you don't master wild yeast. You live with them. Mm-hmm. You get to know them. You get to anticipate a little bit what they do. Mm-hmm. But you need certainly time and attention. Mm-hmm. It's much simpler to pitch selected yeast. I think there is a lot. The complexity of the ciders are, of course, due to the apple varieties, mm-hmm. but also to the wild yeast mm-hmm. And the aromas that they develop. Having said that, I think that cider producers around the world also have to relax. In Normandy we're producing cider for many generations, but with our apples and the type of apples we have. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I think that part of the excitement of the cider world mm-hmm. Is that there is a diversity of ciders. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be really sad to see all the cider producers using the same apples mm-hmm. and using the same process Absolutely. To produce the same cider. So relax, use the local apples you have, the technique you have. A bit of knowledge doesn't hurt, of course.
Right.
But I think that's what's gonna make cider successful.
Mm-hmm. Right. You mentioned the craft beer piece, and what I've seen is everyone initially wanted to make that saison, that mm-hmm. Belgian triple, and they were trying to copy that in a way. And I think that is a little bit, we have to have those apples from France or from the UK, and yet we have what we have. And the cider is always about the fruit, but I've tasted some amazing ciders just with culinary apples, no doubt. And then what happens is we see the shift to adding other products into the cider, to the fresh pressed juice, mm-hmm. Other fruits. Mm-hmm. And then I think it'll come back again as the palate develops also. So this little window that we're in right now is really critical.
Mm-hmm.
What's your hopes for the domain in the next 5 years? So where are you going? What's the direction?
I think here we want to continue to innovate. We've got some new ideas of ciders mm-hmm. to produce.
Mm-hmm.
I think also just simply continue to look after the domain. We've planted new orchards over the last 2-3 years. The orchards are gonna come to fruition in a 4-5 years time. So that's something exciting for me.
Mm-hmm.
See the quality of these apples and their impact on our ciders.
Are those new planting varieties?
No, they're traditional ones.
Okay.
But it's like a baby. You never know how it's going to grow. And we're taking a lot of care of looking after mm-hmm. them and having them grow. But that's going to happen and continue to travel the world, talk about cider, educate people about cider,
mm-hmm.
Try other ciders. That's also one of my pleasures.
Yes, of course.
When I'm around the world trying the local ciders, mm-hmm. I always get educational talks,
mm-hmm.
and then at the end of the talk, one or two guys coming with a little bag, and I know there's some cider in there, and they're gonna ask me to taste it, and I love it. It's great. Share the passion.
That's unique to this culture, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, because it's still and touch wood, and thank God, it's still a world of craft passionate people.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there is a cider industry. But this, I think that people with the craft beer movement
mm-hmm.
have been educated of make the difference between industrial beer and craft beer.
Yes.
So that's clear in everybody's people's mind, I think, more or less. So the people I come across and the people I share my passion with are craft cider people, and I think that's something that's going to last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's more craft cider makers than there are corporate cider makers right now in the world. Mm. And I don't think that's going, it's, in fact, it's growing in leaps and bounds, which is really exciting. Wonderful. Now the folks could come here and visit.
Of course, yeah.
The tasting room.
There's a tasting room. Mathieu is here to welcome people. Mm-hmm. We're also offering a range of educational tours. Mm-hmm. We have the classic tour of the domain, but we're also going to put together a distillation tour where you will spend some time in the still, learn a bit more about Calvados and aging. We're organizing during harvest apple picking events where people get to pick apples, but also understand by tasting the different apple varieties, mm-hmm. what they can offer to a cider blend. Mm-hmm. And also
the distillation, is there a certain time of year that you're doing?
Yes, distillation from November to end of April.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you're going to say, and also,
and then the last little educational tour we do is in the summer. We do a cocktail class every once a week in the summer to educate people about Calvados and cider, mm-hmm. In cocktails.
Yes, and that's something that people don't think about, but that's a whole other way to enjoy cider.
Exactly.
Really hitting the whole scope here, providing that educational balance. That's fantastic for the cider enthusiasts like myself.
We're happy to share our passion.
Yes.
After Jerome and I finished, I next had a tasting with Celine. This is a snapshot of that tasting at Domaine DuPont.
So I was just poured by Celine.
Yes.
Celine. The Cida Reserve has been in Calvados barrels for 6 months. A very deep, it's like a rich amber color, I would say. Effervescence, slight effervescence, sparkling. You could smell that bit of Calvados there kind of coming off. It's a dry, delightful, well balanced. Wow, that's beautiful. That's a really nice special drink. A little bit of those bitter sweet, you know, kind of overtures. Wow, that's great. I definitely want to get the small bottle, which will pack, because there's only so much room I have, and I'm getting quite a bit of cider. Although I do know how to pack it. The pomu, can I try a little bit of the pomu?
Yes, of course.
Wow. A little like orangey too on that. Interesting. Okay, so this is the pomu. And is this minimum of 18 months, or has this been aged longer?
Do you know? I think it has been longer.
Longer. Okay, so very much deeper amber color. You know, like that brown amber that you would see. I kind of prefer pomu over Calvados, I have to say. I don't know.
I do too.
You do? That's interesting, yeah. But maybe I haven't had the right Calvados yet. It's just, you have it kind of, it's a little bit more inviting. It's not buttery, but it's,
I did make it home with a bottle of that Pommeau, and also the Cedar Reserve I had just been tasting that had been aged in Calvados barrels, and a bit of that Cedar Boucher, which comes in a smaller, like a 12-ounce bottles, if you will. Although that never made it out of France, I enjoyed it en route. And some of the Domaine du Pont Cuvée, which is made via the traditional method, much like one would make a champagne. It is bottled condition. Absolutely tasty. And that is sitting, waiting for the next opportunity to be open. If you'd like to find out more about Domaine du Pont, go to the show notes for this episode number 98. Thank you once again, Jérôme Dupont and Céline Écoutemer, for being such kind hosts during my visit. Was fun. Yep. I really had a great time at Domaine du Pont. Loved their ciders. I loved everything I drank while I was in France. What is not to love about a region that is so just rich with tradition and a terroir that is unique to every little village, every little farm. So we're on this total voyage together. There'll be more about Normandy next week. In the meanwhile, I want to remind you about the upcoming event called Cider Days. It happens the first weekend of November this is going to be its 23rd year. And it takes place in Massachusetts. Just go to ciderdays.org to find out the schedule. You want to definitely get some tickets now, friends of Ciderville, if you're going to go to the Cider Salon. There's two sessions. It takes place on Saturday evening. It's going to be outside in a tent. The weather in New England can be, well, as Mark Twain used to say, if you don't like the weather, wait a minute. So do bring clothing, dress accordingly. Last year it was warm. You just don't know. And on Friday night, there's going to be the second annual Cider Meetup. It's going to be held at the Root Cellar in downtown Greenfield, Massachusetts. There are some other cider events taking place around the same time. Those get sold out. So this is something that I set up because really there was this tradition when Cider Days started, and it was just a one-day event. And when everything was all said and done and people went home, those of us who were teaching cider making, kind of helping Terry and Judith Maloney of West County Cider really launch this scene, we'd meet in the back room of their tasting room, you know, with all the boxes and everything. And Judith would bring out a big round of cheese and crackers. And we'd just start rolling out our own bottles and did the here, try this moment. And that was a tradition for many, many years. And now that tradition really blossomed into this gigantic salon. I think they have like 94 different ciders or cideries. I'm not sure. You could get that scoop online. So that is being held on Saturday night. And again, on Friday night, you go to the Root Cellar in downtown Greenfield if you're going to bring cider. And that's really what this is about. There's a $5 corking fee for your bottle, and you could just share it with people. And I'm sure they're going to have some cider cocktails and probably some cider on tap. It's from 6 to 8 p.m., totally free. Share some cider, get to meet some people that you'll be seeing all weekend long, and get in the groove for cider. It's a party that never stops, and it's welcoming to everyone.
You gotta grab that luchi. You gotta bust that thing. Get your kicks on the street. Gotta kick back, step back. It's a rat-a-tat-a, 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 bala. Rat-a-tat-a, 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 holla. I don't wanna be pushed like a doodle the push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like a doodle the gank. When it comes to the cake, be me a thank. I don't wanna be pushed like a doodle the push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like a doodle the gank. When it comes to the cake, be me a thank.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope you are having a hot, dandy kind of day wherever you are in Ciderville. I know I am. It is my birthday today. I'm a 10-10. Kind of goes with, I guess, you know, we those of us who are Libras, we're all into like the balancing, and that's a little bit what cider's about, isn't it? All about balance, whether it's a single varietal cider or you are bringing in the best apples that you can or scrimping wherever you are. I know it's always going to be a good day when you are hanging in Ciderville. Speaking of hanging in Ciderville, if you want to get in on some of these upcoming trips that we're going to be doing over in Europe, a quick way to get on the top of the list is to become a patron of Cider Chat. So big tip of the glass to the folks who are patrons. They join via the Cider Chat Patreon page. And there's also a list there of some commercial cideries who are helping keeping this podcast thriving. So a big giant growler cider tip and 750 bottle hangdog to the folks at Kern Cider in Pennsylvania. Big Fish Cider Company in the Monterey, Virginia. And we're going to go all the way over to the other side of the Atlantic into the amazing country of Luxembourg, where there are some cool people growing orchards, some cider makers who are supporting those orchards, and they all go by the name of Rambourne Cider. Well, it's actually like three guys, but you know, it's a community experience. Thanks everyone there. That's a little bit about getting in on the Totally Cider travel that's going to be coming up. And again, it's the fall where I am. And the nice thing about the fall is it teaches us how to get up again and again with a big old smile on our face. I guess that's a little off topic. A keto joke. It's all about in that art. Learning how to fall and keep on coming back. And that's what it is about cider, kind of like what Jerome said, to relax, enjoy it. You can't tame the wild yeast. You got to go with them, but you got to also understand the wild yeast and be in the groove of cider. Be in the groove of it. Mm-hmm. Cheers to you, Ciderville. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in, you know it, Ciderville.
Going up, going up, going up.
Yeehaw!